You know from there that the Gemara discusses exactly how the tchelis was made and the relationship in terms of the requirements. What if we don't have tchelis and so on? That's how the discussion begins in Maseches Menachos. And we also know that quite a number of centuries ago, it's not exactly 100% clear when, but quite a number of centuries ago, tchelis ceased to be in use in tzitzis and in palace. Again, it's some questions exactly when, but for quite a long time, people wore only white strings, only the lavan, only the white strings, and they didn't have tchelis. And again, the Gemara discusses what the status of the mitzvah wearing tzitzis, wearing tchelis is with only lavan and without tchelis, and that's what the Parakat Tchelis begins to talk about. In the late 1800s, there was a well-known Hasidic Rebbe, Gershon Hanuch Liner, known as the Ratzina Rebbe, who decided to make it one of his missions, a great Talmud Chacham, also a self-educated, a brilliant person who was familiar with science and things outside the direct realm of Halacha as well. And he decided to make it a life's mission to try and figure out what is the creature that produces a tchelis and to reintroduce tchelis into the performance of the mitzvah tzitzis, the mitzvah talit. And he spent time and he traveled to Italy and to other places where he met with chemists and he was in a great aquarium in Italy. And he wrote Sorim, which are available today. He wrote Sorim, which described his research. And he came to the conclusion that a certain species, a certain marine creature known as the cuttlefish, is what produced the tchelis. And he was convinced, he worked in association with a chemist, and he was convinced that this particular species produces the dye that is used to manufacture tchelis. And after he brought that back to his community, so the Radzina Hasidim, the Hasidim followed what the Rebbe tells him, so the Radzina Hasidim and other Hasidim associated with Radzin began to wear tchelis on their tzitzis. Some of the other Talmid Chacham at that time questioned his findings, but nevertheless it caught on, at least in those communities. Fast forward a little bit, Rav Yitzchak Isaac Halevi Herzog, who was subsequently the first Rabbi Rashi, the first chief rabbi in the state of Israel. Rav Kook was the first Rabbi Rashi, but Rav Kook was not alive when the state was established in 1948, 63 years ago tonight, as it happens. And Rav Herzog was the first was Rabbi Rashi in the state of Israel. So Rav Herzog did a lot of research on this subject as well. He was actually chief rabbi in Ireland before he came to Eretz Yisrael. He was chief rabbi. He was a rabbi in Dublin. In fact, he did his doctoral work on colors of the Torah, colors in the Bible, including Argomon and Tcheles. And he felt, he discovered through his research, which included scientific research, he came to the conclusion that the Ratzina Rebbe had made a mistake. He was actually duped by this chemist with whom he was working. And Herzog said he had certain right ideas, but he was incorrect in terms of his conclusion. And Herzog came to some different conclusions. It's an irony of history that when the Nazis in Ashkenaz destroyed the communities of Radzin, so the dye makers there, you know, the whole community was destroyed. And when they reconstituted the community years later in Eretz Yisrael, they wanted to reinstitute, to reestablish the manufacturing of Tchelos dye, but they didn't have the stuff. Everything was destroyed, but Herzog was in Eretz Yisrael, so he had the writings and his correspondence at the time. So in a certain sense, even though from the point of view of Halacha, he actually shlugged up, he actually challenged the Rabbi to Ratzina Rebbe, but it's because of his writings that they maintained, the Ratzina Hasidim maintained. Now that Yom HaZeh, you go to Eretz Yisrael, you see Ratzina Hasidim and certain Beis Lavi Hasidim who wear tzitzis. However, in more recent years, a group in Eretz Yisrael, following the work of Rav Herzog, have come to the conclusion that there is a different creature that is responsible for the dye of Tchilas, what the creature is called the Chilozon in the Gemara. They identify it with a certain type of snail called Murex trunculus, and this has become popular in Eretz Yisrael and in some places here as well. And we thought that given that this is a subject that's really in the news right now in the religious world, combined with the fact that the people learning Daf Yomi just finished his Parak HaTcheles and Maseches Menachos, it was thought that it would be a good idea to invite to our community, Baruch Hashem, two prominent Rabbanim, Talmid Chachamim, who are well known to our community, to both of whom wear Tcheles themselves, to discuss the issues and present some of the issues that come up in this interesting and fascinating area. And our first presenter this evening will be Marga Rabbi of Herschel Schechter, Shlita. Schechter and Twersky before were arguing over who should go first. And so Twersky won out, so Schechter's going to go first. Schechter again needs no introduction to our community here in Teaneck. He's, Baruch Hashem, spoken here many, many times, many, many shiurim. Over many, many years, and is a Rebbe to many of us, including myself, and many of us who are Rabbanim here in town, turn to him with our shilas and for guidance and direction, etc. And Rashecha is going to talk about the question of whether a lost mitzvah can in fact be discovered, given that the Tcheles has been out of use in terms of mitzvahs for so many centuries. There are a lot of issues that come up in reintroducing something into the Torah which has been gone for so many years. And without any further ado, it's my personal covet and the pleasure on behalf of the community to introduce Hallel Gaon and Herschel Schechter.
Thank you very much. The Ratzina Rebbe writes that he was interested in preparing for the rebuilding of the Beis Hamikdash and reinstituting HaKrovos HaKrovonis and the Kohanim. In order to be able to be makir karbonis, have to wear special uniforms, have to wear big day kahuna. The big day kahuna required tchelos, and in the big day kahuna, the tchelos is certainly ma'akev. In our tzitzis, the Gemara quotes a dispute among the Tanoim. What if you have tzitzis and you don't have any tchelos? So the Gemara quotes there was a minority opinion of Rebbe that if you don't have tchelos, you don't have the mitzvah, you lose the whole mitzvah. You know, the Baal HaMo'or and Masech HaShabbos, Paskin's like that. He thinks that's the din. And the Ramban writes there in Perek Banaman, he heard that the Baal HaMo'or never wore tzitzis. If he thinks that if you don't have tchelos, you're not here to the mitzvah, so there's no use in putting on the tzitzis. And then when we were learning that Ramban, so Lecher was so surprised, he said, you mean to say they buried the Baal HaMo'or without a talis? Somehow it didn't bother him that his whole lifetime he never wore tzitzis. So they should just find me. They buried the Baal HaMo'or without a talis. That's what the Ramban says. The Baal HaMo'or never wore any tzitzis. But the accepted opinion is not Rebbe's opinion. Accepted opinion is like the Chachamim, the majority opinion, that the tchelus is not miyaket the salvavim. If you wear tzitzis without tchelus, you yotze the mitzvah partially. The mitzvah of the Shleimusa is tchelus with lavan. And without the chelas, the mitzvah is incomplete, but there is a kiyumah mitzvah, like if a person performs chalitza. So the mitzvah b'shleinus is to do chalitza, the removing of the shoe from the right foot, and the spitting in front of the yavam, and the reciting of the psukim back and forth. The yavam says psukim, and the yavam says psukim, and to the yevet, we paskin that the yotze the mitzvah shalom b'shleinus, without the rikika, without the spitting, without the kriyas apsukim, if you just do the chalitza sasando, but yeah, you have fulfilled the mitzvah in an incomplete fashion. So that's what we assume over here, that the tzitzis is incomplete. There is a kima mitzvah, but it's incomplete kima mitzvah. In Big Day Kuhuna, the preceptor says that v'chala deis. There's no dispute in Big Day Kuhuna if the Kohanim don't have the tcheves where it's supposed to be, so the Big Day Kuhuna is simply not acceptable, and you can't be makor kavanos. So what are we going to waste our time to build the Beis HaMikdash if you don't have any tcheves? So the Radzina read the felt, we have to start preparing in advance. You can't just wait to build the Beis HaMikdash. The Mikdash will fly down from heaven today, right? Yom Atzmaut, and then we'll be stuck. We won't have any trailers for the Big Day Kuhuna, so it'll be a waste. We'll have a base of Mikdash, won't be able to use it. So he thought we have to prepare in advance. So he felt that he discovered the identity of the Chalozain, and he encouraged his Hasidim to use his trailers. At that time, many Rabbanim agreed with him, and many Rabbanim disagreed with him. So one of those who disagreed, Rabbi Yosher Ber Soloveitchik, the great-grandfather of Rabbi Soloveitchik that we knew from Yeshiva, from Boston. And he didn't send a letter in person. An acquaintance of his sent a letter to the Radzina Rebbe to explain why he disagreed. So the Radzina Rebbe has three different volumes, Moshe Sefer HaTorah, now they're all printed together in one line. So in one of the volumes he collects all of the letters pro and con. Letters supporting his trailers and all letters against his trailers. So the letter that he prints from an anonymous acquaintance, he doesn't give the name. He says sometimes Chochma is very close to the Beis Halevi, to the Brisker Rav, Rabbi Yosher Ber Soloveitchik, sent him a letter in the name of Rabbi Yosher Ber why he's opposed. So in the letter that's imprinted, it says the following. If you would have come up with a new fish or a new sea animal that we were not aware of, and you would explain historically why the trailers got lost 900 years ago, whenever it got lost, 1,000 years ago, so then I would be the first one to jump on the bandwagon and also wear trailers. But you're telling me that it's this certain fish, like say the cuttlefish, it's this fish. He said, this fish, our grandfathers knew about this fish, our great-grandfathers, they knew about this all along, and they never used it for trailers, so we have a masara that you're wrong. We have a tradition that you're wrong, because this fish was available to our ancestors, and they knew that that fish has this dye, it spits off this dye. And they never used it, so that's a masara that you're not right. If the Biskarov said, if you come up with a new fish and explain to me why historically it got lost, I'd be the first one to go along. The Soloveitchik family has a different tradition as to what Rabbi Yosher Ber Soloveitchik said. So we heard from our Rabbi Yosher Ber Soloveitchik in New York, and in Eretz Yisrael, the cousins over there heard from Rabbi Elbola Soloveitchik, a totally different version of what the Beis HaLevi said. And the way they say it over is different. That even if you're right, you're wrong, because we don't have a masorah. In order to identify what is chita, what is saora, what is chelas, and colors and names, oris, there's a machlekes, and there's a question in the Rishonim, what is oris? There's a difference between oris and dochen in halachi. You say oris and mizaymus and oris. So which is, one of the two is assumed to be right. Either oris or dochen. So everybody knows. You ask any Puerto Rican in Washington Heights, they all tell you Aros is a rice. You ask any Arab, everybody says in all languages, so many different languages, rice is called Aros or Oris, something like that. So Ois Machlaikis, what is there to fight about? So Rabbi Soloveitchik says, no, it's a sfeika d'dina. We cannot use a dictionary. We can't, just because people tell us that the Oris means rice, everybody knows in all the languages, that doesn't prove anything. You have to have a masorah from Rabbanim, from Talmid HaChachamim, from Jewish people. But since the masorah was lost, even if Oris is rice, it's still a suffering. And even if you'll reconstruct based on archaeology, that the Tchelus is the Burex trunculus, whatever it is, whatever you'll reconstruct based on archaeology doesn't count, because you need a masorah. So even if you're right, you're not right. You can't rely on that. So it's a waste of time, it's a waste of money, that you should come up with this new trailer because there's no masorah. So these are two totally different versions of what the Beis HaLevi said. According to the letter that was printed by Rav Gershon Hena from the acquaintance from the Purim, of the Beis Halevi, he says faket. He says if he would have come up with a new kind of a fish and explained to me historically why it got lost, I'll be the first one to go along with you. I'll weigh your tchelis. You tell me that the tchelis is a fish that the chalazin is a fish that we were all aware of, that has this dye. We have a masori that contradicts it. And the way the Soloveitchik family says their version orally is that that's different. You have to have a masori of what it is, and if you don't have a masori, even if you're right, you're not right. So Rabbi Feinberg Cohen from Flatbush spent a lot of time getting shimush and psak from Rabbi Yashiv in Eretz Yisrael. So when he was back in America, he continued to correspond with him a lot. So one of the letters that he wrote him was about these two versions of what the Beis HaLevi said. Which does he think is the correct version? And in Tzitzi Loima, that the correct version is the way it's printed in the Sefer of the Radzina Rebbe. What does he say about the new credits? So Rabbi Yashiv sent him back a letter, and he gave him permission to print the letter. Rabbi Feivelkong asked, did he give permission to print it? He gave permission to say, printed the letter. Here's Mepharsit in a Torah journal. So Rabbi Yashiv thought that the way the Soloveitchik family says it all, but to him doesn't make any sense. If you have an archaeological demonstration, you have archaeological proof that this is the Tchelis, what do you mean you need a Masorah what the word Chaloz is? If you can figure it out based on dictionaries and based on archaeology. So this is the halazin. What do you need a masora to say what it is? So he thought that the more correct version is the way it's printed in the Sefer of the Radzina Rebbe. That the Beis HaLevi said that we have a masora that you're wrong. But if you come up with a new fish, I'd be the first one to go along. So then question number two is in place. So what about the new halazin that they just discovered in Eretz Yisrael? So Rav Eliashiv writes, it's a good question, I got to think about it. So he didn't answer. So the... Some remember when Rav Soloveitchik delivered this talk in Moria. He gave this talk on many different occasions. There was the Yortzeit Rosh years ago about this Shnei Sugei Hachela, Shnei Sugei Masora. And I remember when he was delivering this talk in Moria, so the Balabatim didn't like it at all. So they had to learn it, Balabatim, then. They used to argue with him in the middle of the Shia. So one of them said, what do you do with the Gemara in Bava Basra? The Gemara says that Rabbi Baba Chana was touring the Midbar, and the Arab showed him the Mesei Midbar. And when Rabbi Baba Chana came back to the Rabbanim and he told them about the grand tour that he had, so they asked Rabbi Baba Chana, there's a machlekes, Beisham and Beisil, how many strings you're supposed to put for tzitzit? They put three strings in every corner that make six, and you're supposed to put four that turn out to be eight. So they asked Rabbi Baba Chana, did you look at the tzitzis of the Mesei Midbar to see which is it? You have archaeological evidence. Who's right, Beisham and Beisil? So he said, it didn't occur to him. So they said, idiot! Rabbi Baba Chana, you're an idiot! You shouldn't look! So they asked Rabbi Soloveitchik, but you're telling us that archaeological evidence doesn't mean anything. So somehow he prayed out of Kasha, he explained how it's arrived there. It's an Ishki Kasha. Then they started asking him, the Gemara has a machlokes HaTanan, what did the tzitz look like? Did it say Kodesh Lashem on one line, or did it say Kodesh La, Lamed, and Yud Kei Vav Kei above that on the upper line? So machlokes HaTanan, what did tzitz is supposed to look like? So one Tana says, don't tell me, I was in Rome. There's a whole story the Gemara tells. So he says he was in Rome, and they showed him in the Vatican, and in the Oitza there. He showed him the kelim from the Beis Hamikdash, and he saw the tzitz, and it's in one line. So don't tell me these mices. So the Gemara says that archaeological evidence seems that it is good. But on the other hand, the Raman Paskins, that's all. The Raman Paskins say Kodesh La, and the Yud Kei Vav Kei above it. So the Kesem Mishkan asks, how can the Raman Paskin against archaeological evidence? The Tana said, I saw the tzitz. So the Kesem Mishnah answers, archaeological evidence is good. But every Kohen Gadol had a different size forehead. So they had to make a different tzitz that should fit every Kohen Gadol. So there must have been many tzitz. The Gemara says there were so many Kohen Gadolim during the period of Bayi Sheni. Several hundred, no, how many hundreds of Kohen Gadolim there were. So he found one tzitz. Maybe that's Sholei Kalocha. Maybe the others did it the way it's supposed to be. Kodesh La and Yud Kei Vav Kei above. V'cha'ena, there's a discussion in the Beis Yosef, in the Prisha, in Hilchas Tfilin. There's a famous dispute between Rashi and Rabbi Natan. What's the order of the Parshas and the Tfilin? So the Hasidim, we're Tfilin the Rashi, Tfilin the Rabbi Natan. It's a suffix. So they found the Achronim quote that they found archaeological evidence They found tefillin in Rabbeinu Tam in the kever of Yecheskel HaNavi. So obviously in the days of Yecheskel HaNavi, somebody was wearing tefillin in Rabbeinu Tam. So that's a raya, that's the correct state of HaParshat. So the other Rechayim said, maybe they were puzzled, and that's why they were going to them next to the kever of Yecheskel HaNavi. But they're all assuming that archaeological evidence is acceptable. The only question is this good archaeological evidence, or is Nishken raya? So that's why Rav Al-Yashiv wrote to Rav Feibelkorn. He thinks that the version that's printed in the Radzina Rebbe Sefer makes more sense to him. He doesn't understand this version that the Soloveitchik family says by orally, that the Beis Halevi said you have to have a tradition. If you don't have a tradition, even if you write in that way. Rav Soloveitchik kept on insisting his pshat. There's a famous Gemara where the Gemara has in Megillah. The Talmidim in the yeshiva didn't know what the word metata meant. The tiktasim and metata hashmen. They didn't know what the word metata meant. So on one occasion I heard Amsa the Rebbe, the maid in Rebbe's home, asked one of the other maids, please take the metata, the broom, and sweep out the floor. Oh, so when they heard the maid use that word in Hebrew, she spoke Lashna Kodesh. So then they understood that it means a broom. And they didn't know what Chalav Lugas was. So also they heard the Amsa the Bay Rebbe, the Maid of Rebbe, he said to someone, what are you eating, Chalav Lugas, or something like that. Then the Bochum were coming in to listen to the Shia Rebbe dispersed. A few Bochum came in at a time, So she said, what are you coming in, Lesergin? They didn't know what the word Sergin meant in the Mishnah. So she said to the Talmidim, what are you coming in, Lesergin? Why don't you all come in at one time? Why do you bother me every time I have to open the door? So that's how they found out what the word Sergin meant. Rabbi Soloveitchik said, why don't they look in a dictionary? And a lexicon. That was his wish. Why don't they use a lexicon? What do they have to wait till I'm said that they already talk? So he said, the answer is that you need a masaira. If you don't know what the word means, you're not supposed to look in a dictionary. I'm said that they already had a masaira from Rebbe. So does say the masaira. The end of Balabatin yes, Rabbi Soloveitchik. That's the pshat in the Gemara. The Gemara says they didn't know what the word Yehovcho. The pasuk says, "Hashlach al Hashem Yehovcho hu yichal kalekas." The Rabbanan, the Bachim didn't know what the word Yehov meant. So till it was an Arab who was traveling on a highway, and another person was going with a wagon, and the fellow who was walking was schlepping a pekel on his shoulders. So the Arab on the wagon said, "Why don't you take your Yehov and throw it on my wagon and come up and ride with me?" So that's when they found out what the word Yehov means. Yehov means a pekel. Hashlach al Hashem Yehov, your pekel of dying is given up to the Baruch Hashem. Don't dying it, don't worry about the future. Let the Baruch Hashem worry about everything. So they said, there it's not Amsa the Bay Rebbe. There was an Arab who told them what the word. The also then she said, no, in the Zohar when it says Ahutaya, it means Eliyahu Anavi. So the Baal Batim look out. It takes every Gemara that seems to indicate that if you have any indication what the word means, if you have archaeological evidence that it means this, he drained everything around. And Amsa the Bay Rebbe, that's called Masura. And the Arab is Eliyahu Navi. So the Baal Batim, I remember, were not so keen about his whole interpretation. So that's his version. That's the Soloveitchik family. That's their oral tradition. And Rav Al-Yashiv thought that it makes more sense to say that he can restore Masoret, our archaeological evidence. What happens if it turns out that you're wrong? Once it turns out that this is not the halos and we made a mistake, so you're not yet to the mitzvah of tzitzis. So the Gemara says in Perakat Chelis that we were just learning the daf. Unfortunately, I'm not learning daf yami. Those who are learning daf yami, what they learned, so the Gemara says, if you bought Chelis, that's a fraud, that's an imitation. So the Gemara says, so you lost a lot of money, it's very expensive. Gemara says, lo yehel olavon, so supply the yotze the mitzvah incomplete. So the Gemara says, beferish, that if you have imitation chelis, it's not the real makoy, so the din is that chelis is not miyakev, and you still yotze the mitzvah in an incomplete fashion. The worst you can do is to lose some money over here. Are you obligated to invest money? It costs a fortune money. Are you obligated to invest money to buy this chelis if you're not so sure? We're not 100% sure that this is the authentic chelis. Maybe it's only a suffix, so would you say suffix? The Rais of Bukhumat to spend so much money. So in the yeshivas, they say a svarah. Did some point out that the Balatani writes in his Shulchan Aruch Harav, he writes this svarah in one place, that suffix, the Rais of Bukhumat, only applies if a person is misupik, whether he
he's not sure if the lulav and esrog that he shook was kosher or not. So if the shake lulav and esrog a second time with a kosher lulav and esrog, he'll know for sure that he's yetzer in it. So then we would say suffik deraisa luchumra, and the first one is lulav is deraisa. So we would tell him he have to shake the lulav again without a bracha and make sure that he be yetzer in it. So there's a svara, everybody tosses about the svara in the yeshivas, that suffik deraisa luchumra only applies. You have to be machmir, and after you do it the second time, now you know for sure that you have fulfilled the mitzvah. But over here, you're going to tell me I should spend $100 to buy something that may or may not be tchelis, and may turn out after I put it on my beggar, I haven't accomplished anything. I'm still not sure if I fulfilled the mitzvah, because I'm not 100% sure. You don't have 100% archaeological evidence that this is tchelis. It's a suffix, it's a possibility. But there is such a svara that this doesn't count. You wouldn't apply in such a case suffik deraisa luchum. So Rabbi Nachum Zemba, Nachum Zemba was a super genius. He was killed by the Nazis. He was a big one of the greatest poilish goyim who was killed by the Nazis. So he had a son who was engaged to get married, and he died at a very young age. So after the son died, he published a correspondence that he had with his son. The son was going out of town in a different yeshiva. And he published the correspondence that he had that to memorialize the son, in memory of the son. So the letters of the son are very strong. The letters of the father are 10 times stronger than the letters of the son. The son knew how to learn very well. And the father knew how to learn much better than the son. So one of the letters, Rabbi Nachum Zemba, he deals with this topic, whether you say, so he says, yeah, in the yeshivas they say such as svara, and he points to where the Baal HaTanya writes like this in the Shulchan Aruch. But he says it's a fine svara, but in the Shulchan Aruch it says not so. And he quotes chapter and verse where it says in Shulchan Aruch that you're obligated to do something b'safek, because safek deraisa l'chumra, even if after you'll do it, you won't know for sure whether you have accomplished anything. It could be that you accomplished nothing. You still say safek deraisa l'chumra. So that's why the pashtus is that if you think that this may or may not be the chalazon, so safek deraisa l'chumra should be required that we should spend money and perform the mitzvah Mishlei Musa. The Arizal is quoted as having said that the mitzvah Pchelis only applies Bizman Shei Beis HaMikdash Yitkai. Bizman Shei Beis HaMikdash Kayim is no mitzvah Pchelis. So this is really, many point out this is really a misquotation. What the Arizal is going to say against the Gemara, the Tanoim and Amoraim and the Gaon and lived after the Churban Beis HaMikdash. And they all bought Pchelis. So what do you mean? The mitzvah Pchelis only applies Bizman Shei Beis HaMikdash Yitkai. So I never saw it inside, but the Rabbanim who saw it claimed what it says in the Arizal is a different thing. The Arizal is posing a question, how could HaKadosh Baruch Hu have allowed such a tragedy to occur to the Jewish nation that the Tchelos got lost? He allowed, the Rabbanim Shalom allowed such a tragedy to happen, the Tchelos got lost. So the Arizal says, the main accomplishment of wearing Tchelos is only Bizman Shei Beis HaMikdash Yitkayim, Bizman Shei Beis HaMikdash Yitkayim. You're not accomplishing that much. But the Arizal didn't say a halachic statement against all the Talaim and all the Amorayim and all the Goyim that Bizman Shei Beis HaMikdash Yitkayim. You don't have to wear Tchelos. He's not saying a halachic statement. He's giving a historical comment. How can HaKadosh Baruch Hu have allowed the Tchelos to disappear? The Satna Rebbe, Rabbi Yoel Teitelbaum, was a super genius in learning, and his svarim. So in one of his svarim, he explains what the Arizal said, based on a Gemara. It's an iluyish einfal, but it's still problematic. The tchelis is supposed to be the color of the sky. A question, the color of the sky, when? So Rashi, in his commentary on Chumash, in the end of Parashat Shlach, Rashi says, the color of the sky at midnight. Because Makas B'chervis occurred at midnight, and the word tchelis means death, and that it means death to the firstborn Mitzrayim, to the Bechari Mitzrayim, and it's supposed to be the color of the sky at night. And the Rambam writes on, so it's supposed to be the color of the sky in the daytime, in the afternoon, a light blue, Rashi says a dark blue. So whatever, the color of the sky. So there is a Gemara, and the end of Brachas, but the Gemara says, the Gemara has in the last parak all kinds of miscellaneous brachas that you say when it's thunder and lightning and you see mountains and valleys and hills and all kinds of strange animals and good looking women and handsome people and so on. So the Gemara says when you see a beautiful sky, a clear blue sky, so there's a special bracha. So then the Gemara says, but we don't recite that bracha bizman hazeh because after the churban beis hamikdash, the color of the sky changed. It's not the right color of the sky. So the Sattva Rebbe said, that's exactly what Arizal said. The Tchelis has to be the color of the sky, but the sky color has changed today. So it's the wrong color. It's an Iluisha Einfal, but it's still against the Gemara. The Gemara says, the Hail Git Tanoim and Amoraim and the Gain who lived after the Chum Beis Hamikdash, this guy, after the Gemara says, after the destruction of Beis Hamikdash, they still wore the Tchelis, however you're going to slice it. Still against the Gemara. So the Pashta says that we still have an obligation to wear Tchelis, even though it's only a Sophic, even though we're not sure, and even though there's no Masorah, we don't have a Masorah, then it's incorrect. So at least Misophic, one should be obligated to. Some people feel uncomfortable. It's Mexican, you have it. What do you mean? The big rabbon and big tzaddikim and gedolim and goyim and all wear the trailers. So we're going to show that we're bigger tzaddikim. We're more medactic and mitzvahs than them. The Gemara says there's an issue of Mexican, you have it. You're not allowed to fulfill a mitzvah in a way that it looks as if you're very arrogant. See, so look in the Gemara, Mexiki Yuharo is when a person is volunteering to meet his chassidus. When Bikiradin, he's not expected to do this. He wants to do something with Nimishur Sadin, and he's not such a big Talmud Chacham, or in the presence of his Rebbe. The Gemara in Baba Kama has, the end of Perek Merubah, the Talmud is there in the presence of his Rebbe, and the Rebbe is not Machmer on this, and the Talmud is Machmer. So that's a chutzpah. Who does he think he is? He's being machmer in the presence of the Rebbe. That's not derech eretz. So the Gemara says, roilen adoso. You should put him in nidui. But over here, we're not talking about a midas chassidus. He says in the chumash that he's supposed to wear tchelis. It's not the yuharov. Maybe it is yuharov, but you have to wear the tchelis, if you like it or not. So what do you have to be concerned about? Merci, yuharov. I don't think that's a consideration over here. In fact, there is a din in the Chumash Bal Tigra. We have to observe the mitzvah says HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave them. It says Bal Tosid Bal Tigra. You're not allowed to add on, you're not allowed to detract. So the Gemara gives an example of the Tanoim give an example of Bal Tigra. A person only puts in three tzitzis in three corners, he doesn't put in the fourth corner. A person puts in three parshas in a tefillin, doesn't have the fourth parsha. So the Beis Halevi and the Chuvas has an essay about that din and the Gemara. What do you mean? He puts in three parshas in the tefillin. So he's not yet in the mitzvah. What do you call it, Bal Tigra? It's a mitzvah of tefillin. If you only have three parshas, you're not yet in tefillin. We pass him that the tzitzis in all the four corners are ma'akfim zezer, machloike satanoi. We pass him, if you don't have all the four corners, you're not yet to anything. So what do you need a din of Bal Tigra? If you only put tzitzis in three corners, you're not yet to the mitzvah of tzitzis. So the Chumash says you have to wear tzitzis. You wear a four-corner garment. You didn't put tzitzis in all four corners. You're mevatel a mitzvah. What do you need about Tigra? So the Beis Halevi develops the whole theme a little bit based on the Rashba and Rosh Hashanah that Bal Tigra only applies in a case like the Gemara quotes. The Gemara gives an example. You have a mizbeach that has four corners, and you have a korban. There are karbonas that need four zrikas on all the four corners. There are karbonas that need two zrikas on two corners. So, what if a person will be makriv a korban that needs four zvikas, and it'll only do b'diyevet one or two or three zvikas. If b'diyevet machlek and satanai, we pass them that the korban will be kosher b'diyevet. It's like performing chalitza, and you didn't do the kriyas apsukim, you didn't do the rikike, you only took off the shul. You mekayim the mitzvah shalom b'shnoi musa. So, if knowingly I know I'm supposed to do four zvikas, and I don't bother to do all four, I only do one, two, or three, I'm in violation of Bal Tigra, because I'm Yetzir the Mitzvah B'diyevet, and I did it L'chatchila the way it's only good B'diyevet, or any other mitzvah like that. But if you have a mitzvah where all the four parishes of the Tefillin are Ma'akev, so the Beis Halevi thinks, you don't need, that's not a Bal Tigra. So here, by the case of Tchelis and Lovin, we pass them that Tchelis is not Ma'akev. So the mitzvah b'shleimus is to do tchelis and lovin. So if the person wears a four-corner talis, and he knows that tchelis is available, and he can afford it, he's not that poor, he can afford it, and he doesn't bother to buy the tchelis, he only buys the lovin, then he's in violation of Bal Tigra. So Bal Gevet Besser would have been better, he shouldn't wear the talis at all. If you don't wear the talis, you're not mechuyev in tzitzis. The obligation of tzitzis only applies if and when you're wearing a four-corner garment, then you're obligated to wear tzitzis in the four corners. If you don't wear a four-corner garment, nishmachiv, we go out of our way, Taisi says, our practice, Ashkenazim, and the practice, we go out of our way, like Moshe Rabbeinu was chalashing to enter Eretz Yisrael. So why did he want to enter Eretz Yisrael? He He wanted to swim in the Kinneret. He wanted to eat the delicious food. What did he need to go to Eretz Yisrael for? So the Gemara says, in order to fulfill the mitzvah of Tlilbert. So Tyson says, what does he need it for? If you live in America, you're not mechuyev in the mitzvah of Tlilbert. Who tells you to go to Eretz Yisrael? So you see that it's the Midas Chasidus to put yourself in a situation where you're obligated to observe more mitzvahs. So Tyson says, based on that, even though we're not obligated to, but it's a midas chasidus to go out of your way, to wear a talis, a four-corner garment, in order to have the mitzvah tzitzit. So there are those who say, those Baalei HaTaisa disagree, and they say, ah, chutzpah, who do you think you are, Moshe Rabbeinu? When you'll be on the level of Moshe Rabbeinu, then go wear a four-cornered talis. There were Sfadishi communities. Now they moved to Eretz Yisrael, so they all took on everybody else in practice, but there were Sfadishi communities. They only allowed the Rabbanim to wear a talis in an Arab country. The Balabatim was considered a chutzpah on their part. Who do you think you are? Like Moshe Rabbeinu? If you go going out of your way to wear a four-corner garment in order to be chayv in tzitzis. So bottom line, if a person doesn't wear a four-corner garment, he's not mevatel any mitzvah. He didn't do the Midas Chasidus. Ashkenazim consider it the Midas Chasidus to go out of your way to wear a four-corner garment in order to be chayv in the mitzvah of tzitzis. But if you wear a four-corner garment and you're obligated to put on tchelis and lavan, and the tchelis is available and you don't bother to buy it, then according to the Beis HaLevi, that's the definition of Baal Tigra. So it's a shame better not to wear the talis at all than to wear the talis and not to wear the tchelis. You wear the talis without the tchelis, you're in violation of Baal Tigra. You don't wear the talis at all, you didn't do anything wrong. You didn't do Amidas Chasidus. So that's the sales pitch, that's the argument why the proper thing l'chorma should be that one should have to wear a talis and put on the tchelis, misofek. Maybe this is the correct tchelis. Exactly how many strings do you have to put into the, how many strings are white, how many strings are blue? So that's a machloikis which is not quoted in Shulchan Aruch. Rashi and Taisis in the beginning of Perek HaTchelis, the first daf are of the opinion that you have to have half and half. Two of the long strings should be blue, and two of the long strings should be white. When you tie them together, you tie everything together, so you're going to have four and four. Four of the strings are going to be blue, four of the strings are going to be white. The Rambam's opinion is that you only have one out of the eight strings should be blue. So it's not that you take a long string and the dye half of it blue. If you take a string that's already twined and you dip it into the dye, so the dye is just going to affect the outside of the string. It's not going to make the inside blue. It's not going to be through and through blue. So it's complicated. So what you have to do is take wool and dye wool blue, and then you have to make a string which is going to be half from the dyed wool that's blue, and half of it is going to be white. That's not such an easy feat. So according to the Rambam, you have to take one out of the four long strings should be half blue, one end of it should be blue, one end should be white. So at the end of the day, after you fold them over, you're going to have one out of the eight strings that are blue, and seven of them are going to be white. And according to the Rambam, no, the Rambam disagrees with the Rambam. You have one long string, one out of the four long strings should be blue, the other three long strings should be white, and you tie it together. How do we pass tense on Shulchan Aruch? They don't quote this machlokes in Shulchan Aruch. The only opinion that's quoted, that's relied on, is Rashi and Tosfos, that it's half and half. We have halachas based on that assumption in the Shulchan Aruch. We have had halachas for the last few centuries, since the Shulchan Aruch was written, based on the assumption, like Rashi and Tosfos, that it's half and half. Everybody knows that if some of the strings of the tzitzis got torn, so if you have two full long strings that are the full size, and the other two strings or less, as long as those that are shorter than they should be, as long as you have a little bit, the Gemara gives you how long it has to be, so then it's okay. But you need two long strings should be kosher. That's based on the Taisus. Taisus quotes up in the top. That two strings white, two strings blue. You need one unit should be shalom. The other unit, as long as it's half the size, is also good. Then you have the Mishnah Berurah, who writes halacha lemaisa. Let's say a person has a silk beged, so you can use silk strings. You can't use silk strings on a cotton beged. You can't use cotton strings on a silk beged, but you can use silk strings on a silk beged. What about the woolen strings? The woolen strings are good, whatever material the beged is made from. What if the strings are going to be, some of the strings are going to be wool, some of the strings are going to be silk? So the Mishnah Berurah passes La Halacha from the Malbim. Malbim has a Sefer Arts and Sakhaim at the beginning of Shulchan Aruch, where he says, as long as each unit is full, if you have two strings wool and two strings silk, that's acceptable. But if you have three and one, it's not good. There are several other places also where the Mishnah Berurah and the Shulchan Aruch has the assumption that it's half and half. So if people want to wear tefillin today, the Pashtun says they should wear the tefillin. How many strings should they use? So the assumption in the Shulchan Aruch is that it's two long strings blue, two long strings white. Either Chumash says psil, psil means a string. So Rashi in his commentary on Chumash explains the word psil does not mean string. It says, Dor ikesh uf salto. And she was Hazim. No, it says Dor ikesh uf salto. So Rashi writes, what is salto? So Rashi writes, tzedret. Dor ikesh uf salto. Tzedret the generation. So psil tcheles means tzedret. You're supposed to wind the string of the tcheles. The Chumash doesn't say one string of tcheles. It's supposed to be two strings of tcheles, two strings of lavan. The tcheles, the purpose of the tcheles is to wind it around the white string. That's how Rashi writes on Chumash. How many units do you have to have? For many centuries, we haven't had tcheles, so we have four units in the tzitzis. You tie double knot on top, then you have seven, then you tie double knot. You have 7, 8, 11, 13. You have double knots on top and on bottom, and in between these different units. That's called a chulya. The unit has 7, 8, 11, 13. Where did these magical numbers, 7, 8, 11, 13, where did they come from? So the Gemara says that the zman that you have tcheles is supposed to be domo l'rakia. And the Gemara says in Chagiga there are seven heavens. So the person is so excited, he's in seventh heaven. So it's based on the Gemara says based on Pesukim and Tanakh that there are seven heavens. So since the tcheles is supposed to be the color of the sky and there are seven heavens, so you should have a minimum of seven, connected to seven heavens. And if you have seven heavens, you have to have six avirim in between. If you don't have empty space in between the first heaven and the second, in between the second and the third, so it's all one heaven. So if you have seven rikiyim, seven heavens, you have to have six avirim in between. So six and seven is 13. So the Gemara says, because when you have tcheles is supposed to be the color of the sky, it's supposed to be manu of the sky, that you shouldn't sin. Tzchatim is coming to Hashem, asisa maisam, so you should have a minimum of seven, and a maximum of 13. So that was the practice for many centuries. We had 7, 8, 11, 13. A minimum of 7 and a maximum of 13. So Tosfos on that Gemara has two interpretations. And the Rambam and the Raban have this dispute. Minimum of 7 and a maximum of 13 was. So we have been assuming for so many generations a minimum of 7 krichas in each chulya. We have 4 chulyas, 4 units, beginning and ending with a double knot. That's our different opinions. With that Ashkenazic practice, we make 5 double knots and we have 4 chulyas, 7, 8, 11, 13. So we have been assuming all along that a minimum of 7 krichas per chulya and a maximum of 13 krichas per chulya. So the more popular opinion among the Baal, that was one Dilan Tosis, the more popular opinion of Baal Tosis was not so. How many krichas, how many wines, how many wraps around do you do in each unit? 3. The Gemara says a chulya has to have a minimum of 3 krichas. You wind it around 3 times. So what does it say, minimum of 7? No, a minimum of 7 chulyas. Instead, we make 4 chulyas. So Tosfos says that's because we don't have chelas. So the whole 7, 8, the whole minimum 7, maximum 13 is irrelevant. Chelas is done with a rakia. So you don't have chelas. So what's the whole story with the 7, with the 13? It's not done with a rakia. But when you have chelas, then this din applies. You have to have the 7. So instead of having 4 chulyas, like we've had for so many centuries, master a minimum of 7 chulyas and a maximum of 13 chulyas. Whoa, that's going to be an awful lot of string. And our practice is we make a double knot and a double knot. Every time you have another chulya, you have another double knot. Every double knot uses up an awful lot of string. So if you want to make 13 chulyas, you're going to have 14 double knots. You're going to have a string that's 5 times as long as any string that we don't do. The maximum, we're not going to do the 13. We're going to try to do the minimum of 7 chulyas. So if you want to satisfy the both opinions in Tosfos, you got to have, instead of 4 chulyas, you got to have 7 chulyas. Then if you want to satisfy the other thing, you have to have, each chulya should have a minimum of 7 krichas. You have to have 7 times 7 is 49 with 8 double knots. You start, our practice for so many centuries was, Ashkenazim always make double knots. So for many centuries we did 4 chulyas. And I said, because the whole thing is irrelevant, because we don't have chelas, it's not done with the rakia. So forget about the 7-13. But if you think that you really may have chelas, then you should make the din of the 7. So you should have 7 chulyas with 7 krichas each. Exactly what do you wind around what? So Rashi said, psil means salto tzedek, you wind around. So don't you wind around the blue, everything is you winding around is blue. So the Gemara says, the first time you wind around, you have to wind white. And the last time you wind around should be white. And then you have blue in the middle. So what exactly does that mean? So the Rambam is the easiest opinion to say. So the Rambam says, let's say you're going to have 7 units, each one's going to have 7 krichas, you're going to have double knots, you're going to have 8 double knots. So the Rambam says, in the first unit, you're going to have 7 krichas, so the first kricha, the first wraparound should be with a white string, and the next 6 and the first kricha should be blue, and the next 7 is blue, and blue, and blue, and blue, and blue, and blue, till the last unit. So the last unit should be 6 krichas of blue, and the last kricha is white. The very first of the, you have 7 times 7 is what? It's 49. Spheres of iron. So the first kricha and the last kricha is going to be white, and all the other 47 krichas in between are going to be blue. That's the Rambam Shita. That's easy. Taisus and the Raiva present other possibilities how to read the Gemara. It's simply a question how to read the Gemara. So one opinion is that you keep on alternating. You have white, blue, white, blue, white, blue. That's quite a trick. You have to keep on switching strings. You white, then you do blue, then you do white. Another opinion is the first chuyah should be white. The second chuyah should be blue. The third chuyah should be, you alternate, not you alternate one and one and one and one. You alternate, the first chuyah should be white, the second chuyah should be blue, the third chuyah should be white. And then there are different variations over here. So there are different traditions from the days of the Gaonim. The Gaonim who still wore trailers. That was the time that the Tchelis disappeared, about the period of the God. So they have in the Sefer HaGaon different versions exactly how to read the Gemara. So that, at least the Gemara says, that's not Niyakiv. That's not Niyakiv. So, different practices how to do it. A big question would be, I met a man in Los Angeles. He asks me, are there any sources in Talmudic literature that the Tchelis is poisonous? So I said, why? So he tells me he works for the federal government, and his job is to test all the dyes in the garments, because there are children, some adults, who like to chew their clothing. So if the color, if the dye is poisonous, so you got a problem. So the government, the federal government, makes sure that clothing manufacturers don't put poisonous dye. So he says he tested the new Tchelis, and he says it's a shtickle poisonous. So he wants to know, are there any sources in Talmudic literature? So I started to think. The only thing that came to mind is that Rashi, in his commentary on Chumash, Rashi says Tchelis comes from the word Tichlot, which means death. And Tchelis is supposed to be the color of the sky at midnight, because it's supposed to represent Makas Becheres, which occurred at midnight. Which maybe is supposed to represent death, maybe it's supposed to be poisonous. That's the only thing I knew about that. So here you have a question. How dark should the dye be? If you dilute it with more water, it'll be light blue. If you don't dilute it so much, it's going to be dark blue. So you're supposed to make it like Rashi, dark blue, like the color of the sky at midnight, so almost like black. The sky looks practically black now. Or is it supposed to be the color of the sky in the daytime? That's not a problem. I'm like this Rashi and Rambam. I remember Rav Soloveitchik once gave a Yortzeit Rosha on Tzitzis. So the Chelek HaGadol, those who remember, the Chelek HaGadol always used to be related, not always identical, related to the Chelek HaLochas. And the Chelek HaGadol, he was discussing whether Tchelis is supposed to represent Midas HaChesed and Midas HaDin. So part of the drasha was that according to Rashi, that it's midnight and it's Makas B'choris, then it's supposed to represent Midas HaDin. According to the Rambam, that it's the color of the kind of daytime, it's supposed to represent Midas HaChesed. And that was just the first line, and I got lost after that. I didn't understand the rest of it. He was quoting passages from Zohar, which you have to have the intelligence of a 40-year-old to understand. And I didn't have that intelligence. I probably was being 40 years old when he gave that drush. But the rest I didn't understand. So that's the question, how dark should the blue be? Tell you the truth, I don't know if that's me'akev. That's not discussed in the poskim. If you made, instead of dark blue, you made a little lighter. Instead of lighter blue, you made a little darker. They don't discuss that. According to Rashi, it would be possible to make like the right. I would imagine whatever you do, as long as the right color blue, even if it's not exactly as intense as it should be, or as diluted as it should be, probably would also be good for the other. But my impression is that at least the trailers that they have now should at least be considered a suffix. And Safik Beraisa Nechumis, my impression is that it would be better not to wear a tavos at all than to wear a tavos without putting on chelis. If the chelis is available, and you don't bother to put it on, then you're, strictly speaking, it sounds like you're in violation of Baal Tikra. But if you don't wear the tavos at all, so you're up to home, there's no trouble at all. There's much more to discuss regarding all of the aspects that I discussed, but the time doesn't allow, and I'm sure the next speaker will have something wonderful to say. I can't hear the next
Before introducing the next speaker, I'll point out in terms of archaeological discoveries that Shechter referred to during his presentation. Thank him very much. It's interesting that very recently they found, and I have some papers here which after the Shia people are welcome to take a look at, they found in a dig on Har Tzion in Yerushalayim findings from the first century, which is before the Churban of the Bayis Sheni. In an area which identified as home for Kohanim, but they found dozens of these shells, the truncus shells, which means that the Chazal were aware of this particular species. Now, one of the questions is that it's possible that, Rosh Hashanah alluded to it before, it's possible that the Chazal were not aware of this particular species, and that's why they didn't say it's no good. And maybe the real chalosim is something else, and Chazal dismissed what they felt they had to dismiss. For example, they dismissed something which comes from a plant. The Gemara calls it kala'ilam, which is indigo. The Chazal say that that's not correct, that's not proper, and some want to bring it right. And they say, well, listen, if they had this this other trunk, this type of snail, so if that's not correct, so the Gemara should have said that's also not correct, just like they say that the kala'ilam is not correct. However, the question is, well, maybe they didn't know about it. However, recently they discovered these shells from the Bayis Rishon period, which indicates by the Sheni period, the first century, which indicates that they did know about it, and they didn't say that it's incorrect. And the Pashtus is that one can make it is correct. In addition, again, it produces the color, that's for sure. The other point that they found the garments, both in Masada and in some places in Russia and other places, garments nothing to do with tzitzis, but garments with this color dye on it, and it remains fast. One of the things that the Gemara says is that the dye doesn't fade. And they found the garments from so long ago, the color is still very much intact. Anyone would like to look at a brief summary of these findings after the Shira, these papers in the front. The last couple of years, our community has the great privilege to have in our midst a very prominent Tal Chacham, speaker, thinker, prolific author and writer, Rabbi Dr. Abraham J. Tversky, Shlita, Baruch Hashem, has had the opportunity during a lengthy and productive career to produce many, many works that have been of great help to many people in many, many different areas. I don't think there's any area that he hasn't written about very much. And it's really a schus for our community to have him here, to be able to speak from time to time in our shul and other shuls in the neighborhood. And it was actually, I have to admit, that having this get-together this evening was Rabbi Tversky's idea. Because a couple of months ago, he mentioned to me, I wear the talis with chelis, and so does he. And he says, you know, Rabbi, you wear the chelis, I wear the chelis, maybe we should have a program in the shul to explain to people in the community what it's about. So it was his impetus, so to speak, that got me thinking about putting this evening together. And it's again a great privilege and a personal cover to introduce our Gaon of Avraham Yeshua Tversky.
When I was a child, there were some people who I saw were wearing tailors. My father didn't wear this tailor, but at that time was the Hodzin of tailors. And a little bit chauvinistic, we had in our family a Zedra Makala Batumarod book, outstanding
Gadol in the Baruch HaKodesh, and he was living at the time when there was dinner for Mrs. Chelus. And then the mother did not wear it. And for me that was enough. Then the mother did not wear it, and I don't have to. But as it turned out, the Rav was misled by one of his by the chemists. What happened was that I believe that Zina initially wanted the murex truncal as missing. Good evidence that he wanted the murex truncal itself. The only problem is that snail only produced a purple color, right? And everybody knew that chelis, when we learned the chedel, is brulevo, right? It's a blue color, diamond lirikia. So he dismissed the murex, but that couldn't be it. And then he went searching for another, and then he found this cuttlefish, and the cuttlefish said, this is a black ink, and he gave it to a chemist, and the chemist processed it so that it turned out with a blue dye. That blue dye is Prussian blue. It has nothing to do with the cuttlefish. If you put it in corn beef, you get the same thing. So Prussian... When I moved to Saul, my first place that I lived was in Efrat. And I lived almost door to door with Rabbi Thomas's brother in law, Rabbi Bruch Sturman, who was very much involved with the production of chelos. In fact, we went out for a dig to find the chelos. But the evidence is monumental that the chelosin is the murex trunculus. Almost every sign that the Gemara gives, and we went out and watched it being made, where the Gemara says that you have to put seya, you have to crack the snail. You don't have to crack the scuttlefish. So you have to crack the snail. And then the Gemara says in Shabbos that you have to get the mucus out as quickly as possible after you crack it, because a moment later the enzyme destroys it and you won't get the color out. So every evidence is that we went out on the shores there and we found some of the pits where there's thousands of shells of murex trunculus. Because that was used in the dye production. But it was used in the dye production for the royal purple, for the algaman. Now, the breakthrough was that, I think it was either Barry Lund or where somebody was working with this murex dye, and because it's a snail, and you know what it's like. Well, it's like if fish stay around for more than a few hours, it produces a terrible odor. So they kicked them out of the laboratory, and you had to do the production outside. And when you produced the dye outside in the direct sunlight, it turned blue. So we had the solution to the problem. Right? It was the murex trunculus. Yeah, but it was not purple, and if you process it properly, it turns blue. Now, the evidence is so overwhelming. The Talmud says, Ani Hashem Elokecha, the Pasha Tzitzis. The Gemara says, Ani Hashem Elokecha, Hashem says, I am the only one who will distinguish between somebody who sells indigo for Kala Ilan, indigo for Chelis. Because indigo is identical to Chelis, and Hashem says, I'm the only one who can tell it. You can't tell it chemically, you can't tell the difference between indigo and Chelis. So, indigo and murex, Chelis, are identical. Indigo and Rosina Tefillos are totally different. You don't need to be a chemist to find the difference between indigo and Prussian blue. They're totally different substances. So, every indication is that this is so. With all the overwhelming evidence that this is the true Tefillos, the only question is, so why not? And say, well, maybe it isn't. So it isn't. So you put on pink tefillos. There's no mitzvah that it has to be white. Right? So you have an opportunity for fulfilling the mitzvah d'oraisa with tefillos, right? And you can't go wrong. The only possibility is that if you have a linen garment and you want to put in wool tefillos, there you have to be 1,000% sure, because otherwise if it's not real tefillos, it's shekels. And you got a problem. But if you're not going to put it in the linen garment, it's win-win. Every reason for it should be, and no reason for it not to be. So I can't begin to understand now. We heard the two versions of the argument of bliss. That one that alleged that the Mishalevi said that there was no Messiah on it. How many people have turkey Thanksgiving? Yeah. We have turkey Thanksgiving or during the year around? Yeah. Turkey is a bird that was discovered in America. In fact, it's referred to as in Halacha as Oipoidu, the Indian chicken. Right? Because they thought the time that they found India. Right? Turkey did not exist in the time of the Gilead. It didn't exist. Turkey was not known to the time of the early post-Gilead. Okay. Where's the Messiah on turkey? And yet we all eat turkey. I'm not sure why. No, it's there are some people who refuse to eat turkey, which is okay. But if you're going to eat turkey, then you got to wear feathers. Then there's no excuse. I had heard that Yeltsin said that he believed that it was that the tefillos is real, but he said, I can't come out with the pshat halacha to put a burden on Klal Yisrael of having to put such, you have 8 boys in the family, right? And each child is going to have 2 or 3 talis of talent, and the talis go wrong, they can go broke. I heard that this was the reason that he did not want to come out with a psychologa that you have to wear tails. But otherwise, it doesn't stand to reason why not. It is expensive, cost about, as far as I know, about $50 for a set of tails. So, I can't get involved with the halacha that's something for poskim, but I just say that the logic is, and as you heard from the center of that, are you going to slow up? That maybe it's better not to wear talis at all, rather than wear talis without tails. Interesting consideration. But I want to say something else. The whole mitzvah of tzitzis emphasizes u'reisan oisan. That you should see. Incidentally, it does say u'reisan oisan, you should see them. But u'reisan oisan, you should see it. What's the it? The only it there is the psil tails. The mitzvah of u'reisan oisan clearly goes on the psil tails. And why? The Gemara says why? Because then the Chelus is done on Yam de Lekir. The Kir of Hizim, the Mesa Chelus, had a very good observation. He says, what do you have to go with? The Chelus is done on Yam, and the Yam is done on Lekir, and the Lekir, the Kir Shakom. Go directly to the Kir Shakom. What do you need the ingredients there for? He said, there's a Musar in that. That you don't go direct, you have to go with the Hadroga. The Gemara says that I'm getting off the subject, but the Gemara says that the Pchir was sitting in a Shir by Rebbe, Rebbe Yehuda Nosi, and Rebbe Yehuda Nosi was offended by somebody who had eaten garlic and it was a very offensive odor. So Rebbe Yehuda Nosi, the Rebbe said, please, whoever ate the garlic, please leave. The Pchir got up and left. Later on, Rebbe's son said to Rebbe Pchir, it was so rude of me going after eating garlic, sitting in the tent of my father with the window. So he said, I didn't. I hadn't eaten garlic. But I wanted to protect the identity of the person who did eat the garlic. Right? So therefore, I got up and left to protect his identity. Okay. So the Gemara said, where did he get that idea from? He said, because of an incident that happened with Reb Meir. Woman came into the Medrash and she told Reb Meir, one of the Talmidim here, one of your students, gave me Kiddushin. Gave me a ring and said I had Mekadesha, so I'm married to him. I don't know which one it is. So Reb Meir said, every one of us has to write her a get, and Reb Meir himself wrote a get for her. He also gave her a get. And he also says, well, where did Reb Meir get that idea from? Got that idea from Shmuel HaKotel. When they made a meeting to the Kriyas HaKodesh in the Shonot, they invited 8 Talmidei Chachamim and 9 showed up. So the Rosh said, the head of the Sanhedrin said, please, will the uninvited person please get up and leave? So Shmuel HaKotel got up and left. He was invited, but he wanted to protect the identity of the uninvited person. So, Chaim Shmuel Levitt says, then they asked for where did Shmuel Levitt get from? Got from Yeshua Ben Nun. So you have, he got it from him, he got it from him, he got it from him, he got it from him. He said, why can't you go direct? Right? And they say, the first one, where did he get it from? He got it from Yeshua Ben Nun. He said, no. Yeah, you have no business going to Yeshua Ben Nun. That's too big a jump, right? You go to the first step. Right? You can go to the mayor, and the mayor can go to Shmuel HaKotel. Shmuel HaKotel can go to Shmuel HaKotel. So Elijah says, it's a matter of hadoge. You go stepwise. You don't go right away to the Kishon HaKotel. Right? You take some intermediate steps in order to be able to finally get to the point where you're attached to the Kishon HaKotel. But at any rate, there is a good reason to emphasize Chelis as a point of something to attract the eye. And by the way, the word tzitzis also has to do with vision. Meitzitz v'nacharakim, peering. The tzitz of the Kohen Gadol is worn above the eyes. And the tzitz of the Kohen Gadol is bound on his head with a silk chelis. It all fits together. And the reason I emphasize that so much, and incidentally, the Gemara says that if a person does not wear a chelis, it's not quite as bad as if a person does not wear the white. Why? Because the white is easier to get. Right? So maybe the blue was harder to get. So the Gemara refers to the white as a muscle of a king who told his servants to get a seal for him, a chosav. Right? And one was a chosav of, told one servant to get the chosav a seal of clay, and the other one to get a seal of gold. Right. And they both did not fulfill their missions. So the one who did not get the seal of gold was not punished so severely. Getting the seal of gold was very difficult. But a seal of clay, anybody could have gotten it. So why didn't you get it? So Tosfos refers to the chosen of teeth, the seal of clay, as being the white thread of the tzitzis. And explains that a chesed is a signet that was used to show who the slave belongs to. just like you branded an animal, right, to show who the animal belongs to. Same thing, Avodim had a signet, a sign as to who they belong to. So the tzitzis, the lovam, right, is a symbol that we are Avodim to Hashem. Which is fine. But that's the lovam. So what's the tzitzis, what's the chesim zov? The chesim zov is the chelis. That is similar to the chelis worn by the tzitzis of the Kohen Gadol, to show that we are proud in being Avodim of Hashem. So, the lovam, the white says, is yes, we are Avodim to Hashem. And the chelis says, and we're proud about it. The reason I think that this is so important is that we have to recapture and build our pride in being Avodim to Hashem. And I think that chelis helps emphasize that. It's the chesim zov. It's our pride in being Avodim to Hashem. And the whole parsha of tzitzis has to do with riyah, with vision. The epidemic that's killing our community today is pornography vision. Young people are being corrupted left and right. Families are falling apart because we're contaminated our vision. And the parsha of tzitzis is urisem oisoyus chaltem es kol mitzvos Hashem. That if we will see the tzitzis will be a reminder, as we say, but it will be a reminder of bringing closer to a kedushas ha'inayim. If there is anything that is necessary today, it's shmiras ha'inayim. It's unfortunate that we have situations, and I'm talking from practical business because I only get these calls about four times a week. This has happened from families where you would never suspect that this would happen. And the mashkes, it's very interesting. There's a gemara. You know, the power of lust is unbelievably strong. Unbelievably strong. I mean, yeah, I understand the temptation there. Gemara says that the Bakiva, then Gemara introduces says that the Bakiva used to mock and provoke the sinful people. So the Sultan said, oh, right, you think that it's so easy to resist temptation? And so the Sultan disguised himself, transformed himself into an exceptionally beautiful woman on top of a palm tree and tempted Rabbi Akiva. And Rabbi Akiva started to climb the palm tree to reach the beautiful woman. And when he was halfway up the palm tree, right, Hashem told the Sultan lay off. His kedusha of Torah protects him. Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva, they torture him. They torture him with a rake by his execution. And he died saying, and he wasn't able to resist the temptation. That's the power of temptation that we have. And the Sultan today is very active. The Sultan has found his way into every internet. And I can't tell you that don't use the internet because it's impossible to get along today without an internet. But we have to realize what kind of poison this is, what kind of toxicity it is there. And we have to look for ways to combat it. I don't have the solution to it. But if I can find one tiny thing that may help a little bit to Kedushas Einayim, and that is enhance the mitzvah of tzitzis, enhance the mitzvahs of Nisa Moshe, make the tzitzis even, it's wonderful. We see people going with their tzitzis displayed, which is wonderful. I believe it's a Kiddush Hashem, right? And, yeah, we should say Risa Moshe that when we see the tzitzis, well, we automatically think of all the mitzvahs. Unfortunately, we're not zeichet to that yet. But if we can do anything to make the mitzvah of tzitzis more attractive and more prominent, and bring it to our attention, greater to our attention, will enhance the isamoisoi. And if for no other reason, right, this is an adequate reason why I believe that we should all, I can't ask everybody to spend 50 bucks for each telescope and then for each tablet, so, but if we can, for people can afford it, an excellent reason why, in addition to the point that our chef pointed out, but in addition to that, it can help us with overcoming a serious plague that is infesting our community. And so we hope that this chusam mitzvah, whether you wear, whether you do wear tefillah, we don't wear tefillah, that the chusam mitzvah sitzes, and the chusam tayag mitzvah. Well, by the way, I must tell you something. I don't know what to make of it. I really don't know what to make of it. But as I told you, I was living next door to Baruch Sturman, and one day Baruch kind of runs in, and he said, "Hey, first you got to look at this." And look at what? We say in the morning when we put on the film that the tzitzis, that b'schus tzitzil, the tzitzis ha'ole tayai. Now, the tzitzis equals 613, so that's the kind of combination that came up as how to 613. Some Scandinavian scientist was working with the dyes, right? And each dye has a wavelength color. Each color has a particular wavelength, right? And it's measured in units. This guy is a non-Jew who has no idea of chelis even existing, right? But the chelis of Murex Tankel has the wavelength of 613. I don't know what to do with that. It's just a fantastic, fantastic thing. But I could tell us and help us as close to the mitzvahs, whichever one will be kind, should be making it, should protect us, and school can make a tayag, somebody who fulfills mitzvahs, because he couldn't fulfill the whole tayag, and because of that, we will be zaychet to the base of Binyan Beis HaMikdash with the Kahanim, who will be wearing the tchelos.
At this time, maybe for just one or two questions for either Sheffield or Torsky. Anybody have any questions?
Yes,
so,
I heard it from Reverend Yashir, that he was concerned with the Akhanat, still fails to be the Min Akhanat. You can't have, let's say, a white beggar with red tzitzis, so that maybe if it's blue and it's not really tzitzis, then it would violate that.
The problem with that, there was an issue in case the tzitzis is not accurate, it's not the right one, but there is a chumrah that's quoted in the Shulchan Aruch that the string should be the same color as the garment. We usually wear a white garment, so if the chelis is not authentic blue, and it's supposed to be white, then it's not white. So this is the Rambam's opinion. Most of the Rishonim disagree with the Rambam. The meaning has been for many centuries that we're makpid to wear a white garment and white strings, so you can't go wrong. But strictly speaking, the Gemara says, like Rabbi Korsky quoted also, the Gemara says, lo yehei ala lavan. If you fell in and you bought the klo ilon, the Gemara says the tzitzit is going to be kosher anyway. So you won't have the chelis. The Gemara said the fair is not like that Rambam. The chatchila were choshish for the Rambam, so we always wear white begotten and white strings. So the evidence would be what we do.
Clarify for me, Steve, I'm a little concerned this. I said at one point that Rashi and Tosafot would say the number of chelis strands have to be for Rashi 2 and 2, which means 4 by 4. And a few minutes later, he said that Rashi says, if one long chelis all around all the others.
No, Rashi says that the word psil means to wind around. But the purpose of the chelis is to wind around the others. But how many strings do you need? So Rashi and the Gemara, the first Dachanat chelis says like Tesla.
So you have one long chelis wound around, two white and one chelis?
No, you have two long blue strings and two long white strings. And then you should wrap around the chelis.
So it's two wrap around, or four wrap around, four.
You wrap around with one string, around the seven. You take one strain and wind around the seven. So we have, now for many centuries, we have four units. Now many people are trying to make seven units to satisfy that opinion of Tosis. You don't necessarily have to use the same blue string every time that you want to wind around. You always use whichever string is the longest. When you're going to wind around, it's going to get shorter. So you should use the other string that's, every time you finish winding, making a double knot, a different string is going to be the longest. So you always use the longest string, because after winding it around, it's going to become the shortest string. You always wind one string around seven, and the purpose of the trellis is to today, silk. Silk means to wind around.
I thought that the black stripes that we have in the talus is supposed to be a zeicher for us for the trellis. Yeah. So those that wear trellis should not be wearing the talus with black stripes to be consistent.
There's no need for any black stripes. The Mishnah Berurah quotes that the black stripes, the talus should really be white for two reasons. The one reason is that in Sefer Daniel, he has the vision of HaKadosh Baruch Hu as an old man with long white hair and wearing a white garment. So the Kabbalim say that the white garment that the Baruch Hu was wearing and the vision of Daniel, Levushe Ketlak Chida, the malchus was white as snow. So the white garment was a talus. Because the Rebbe Shalom is begged, it's a white talus, that's Alpi Kabbalah, we should wear a white talus. Then Alpi Nigla, Alpi Alache, because it's for the Rambam. That the Rambam says that the color of the garment will be orange, then the Chutim should be orange. The color of the garment will be green, so the Chutim should be green. So the Rambam says, we don't want to get involved, so you wear a white garment and white stripes. Right. So why do you have black stripes? So the Mishnah wear black stripes, that's Zechel and Chelus that's missing. That's on the assumption, like Rashi and Chumash, that the tchelis is supposed to be the color of the sky at midnight. That's like black. Other people have blue. Instead of black stripes, they have blue stripes. That's following the Rambam, that the tchelis is supposed to be the color of the sky in the daytime. They make a zechel of tchelis there. So if you have real tchelis, you don't need the black stripes. It's not there if you have black stripes. You don't need it. You don't need a zechel of tchelis if you have the real McCoy. Or if it's not the real McCoy, so that's the Zechel of Chemes. You have the imitation Chemes, that'll be the Zechel of Chemes.
Thank you very much, both to the Tourism of Sheffield, we'll dive in more than just a moment.
Any physicist will tell you that 613 nanometers is not blue. In some place, past red, maybe yellow. And look at that. So, but what you have, though, is a dye solution.